This is a Charles Russell Speechlease podcast.
Welcome to the first episode in our new podcast series, The New Normal. This series is intended to give listeners a quick and informative guide as to legal issues arising out of COVID-19, which are affecting and which may continue to affect the construction industry in the future. Each of our podcasts will focus on a different issue, such as relevant contractual provisions in existing and in future contracts, health and safety, changing demands and opportunities and risks. To introduce myself, my name is Jane Robertson. I'm an associate with Charles Russell Speechlease in the construction, engineering and procurement team. I will be leading the discussion in this first episode. Joining me today, we have Fiona Edmund, a partner in the construction and engineering and procurement team. Fiona will be discussing the key issues arising from the government's guidance on responsible contracting and the Construction Leadership Council's equivalent guidance for non-public contract. Also joining me today is Michael O'Connor, another partner in the CEP team. Mike will be discussing NEC and FIDIC contracts and specific issues arising under those contracts for COVID-19 related issues. Well, thank you both for joining us today. I think we'll kick straight off and we'll start with JCT and go straight over to you, Fiona. Just for a bit of background for our listeners, you recently wrote an article which is titled COVID-19 Time and Money under JCT. Now, we won't reiterate the article here, but it's worth a read, so I would highly advise that. But Fiona, if we could then just question you on some of the points in the article and maybe dig a little deeper, particularly with relation to the government's new guidance. You explained that despite potential contractual elements to extensions of time and money, many employers and contractors are considering a pragmatic and risk-sharing approach in relation to COVID-19 on their projects. Is this still the case given the government's guidance on responsible contractual behaviour?
Yes, absolutely, this is still the case. The government's guidance, which was published on the 7th of May, has been reinforced by guidance published by the Construction Leadership Council, both of which really emphasised the requirement for employers to act and both parties to act responsibly and fairly and really in the national interest in performing and enforcing their contracts. Now, that sounds very demanding, but all it's simply saying is that construction is likely to be at the forefront of helping kickstart some areas of the economy, and therefore people should act responsibly and fairly and not be too contractual in their approach. And certainly the behaviours that we're seeing from employers and contractors support that.
Okay, so you mentioned that the guidance encourages the parties to act responsibly and fairly. Does it give guidance or examples as to where this is sort of specifically encouraged in construction contracts?
Absolutely. The areas are the areas where we often see a lot of disputes, bluntly, and perhaps as you would expect. So it encourages responsible and fair behaviour when it comes to making payments, the operation of payment mechanisms, requesting and allowing extensions of time, and also how the parties then choose to interpret some of the clauses in their contracts, which they could use in the COVID scenario. So regarding force majeure, frustration, change in law, and compensation events.
Okay, so how about termination? I know in your article you mentioned that there's a mutual right of termination following a suspension of 2 months under JCT. Does the guidance specifically refer to this?
Yeah, absolutely. The CLC guidance specifically picks up on that and says that really the party should seek to agree a waiver before there is a right to terminate. And actually, to be honest, given the timescales that this has all been happening over, that hasn't really been an issue that we've seen. So there hasn't been a need for the waiver. At the beginning of this, we did see employers and contractors agreeing a specific extension to that 2 month period so precisely so they didn't end up in that scenario.
That makes sense. And then I suppose lastly, in light of the new guidance, is there any advice that you would give it to those under JCT contracts as sites are beginning to reopen?
Yeah, absolutely. And they're pragmatic, common sense ones. Health and safety obviously is the priority. So pay close attention to the CLC site operating procedures. Make sure there's communication between the parties and good records, agreeing what is going to happen to ensure that there is safe working on site. There may be delays caused by implementing new health and safety procedures. And part of that then brings me to my next point in advice, which is really until there is any agreement reached, commercial agreement reached between the parties, if there have been allowances regarding the COVID situation, then the contractual mechanisms under the contracts do still need to be pursued, not necessarily in a contractual way, but it's just simply a question of crossing T's and dotting I's. So if you're serving notices, well, or obliged to serve notice under the contract, well, then you do need to serve them. You do need to make sure that you serve them properly. And you need to do that in order to preserve your position under the contract. That shouldn't rail any commercial discussions that are going on alongside it.
Yes, I agree. And I also think that lends itself not only to JCT contracts, but generally to NEC and FIDIC that we're going to discuss now. But thank you, Fiona, for that. That was really helpful.
Pleasure.
Turning now to NEC contracts and over to you, Mike. How do contractual provisions under the NEC and suite of contracts deal with COVID-19 related issues?
Yeah, I think the first thing I suppose to bear in mind in all of this is that COVID-19 and its impacts from a contractual perspective will be treated as any other event of delay or potential entitlement to claim for additional monies. And under the NEC 3 or 4 suite of contracts, that's through the compensation events regimes under the various suites of contracts. I suppose one thing to bear in mind in all of this is that the contractor is still obliged, part of this process, to establish that the event caused by a COVID-19 event or an issue falls under one of the compensation events and has caused delay to the project or has caused the contractor to incur additional cost. And that it's only really if those are established or can be established that the contractor would be entitled to an adjustment to the completion date or to recover its associated cost. I think sort of picking up on what Fiona has said, however, under the government's guidance and certainly the CLC's guidance, there is this overarching requirement, request, however you want to put it, that is encouraging the parties to deal with matters fairly and responsibly and moving forward. That is obviously actively being encouraged.
So just going back to what you said in relation to how entitlement would be established.
Mm.
At the moment, the impact or the effect of COVID-19 on projects is still most likely relatively unknown. So for example, sites might be still working out how to comply with the government guidance and implementing new safe working practices. So
yeah,
it might not be known yet how this will be implemented or what the impact on completion dates might be.
Sure.
Given these difficulties and the fact that the suite of contracts intends to make assessments about the impacts prospectively, do you have any advice for those parties using NEC? Because this might be quite difficult at this stage, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, certainly sort of, you know, having to think about how you're going to deal with additional time that may be incurred for having different work breaks at different times for different personnel, different workers, or the additional time that might be required to clean and prepare work areas. That is still, you know, potentially a relatively unknown issue or impact. And as you rightly said, then it is meant to be dealt with prospectively so that both parties share that risk under the NEC suite of contracts. But the NEC actually does permit the project manager to express assumptions about particular compensation events when seeking quotation from the contractor. So in a COVID-19 situation, he could make an assumption about how much time or an issue that this COVID-19 impact is having and ask the contractor to quote based on that. The contractor would then make his quotation based on those assumptions. And the provisions and the mechanisms of the NEC 3 and 4 allow for adjustments to be made at a later stage if those assumptions turn out to be incorrect. And I suppose it's important to bear in mind that the quotation has to be set up based on those assumptions. It cannot then, if there are no assumptions within the compensation event or assessment, then it's important to bear in mind that those are taken forward and assume that everything has been covered by that compensation event.
Yes, well, that makes sense. Also, in Fiona's article on JCT contracts, she mentions that the JCT suite of contracts permits extensions of time for force majeure events, and COVID-19 is likely to be considered such a force majeure event. Is there a similar provision under NEC?
Yeah, there's no sort of express force majeure clause or entitlement under NEC as there is under a JCT. But there is clause 19, and that says that if an event occurs which stops the contractor from completing the works or causes delay to the completion date, which neither party could prevent the event from occurring. And an experienced contractor would have judged the contract date, and that's the important date, at the contract date, to have such a small chance of occurring that it would have been unreasonable to have allowed for it, then the contractor will be entitled to an extension of time as a result. And that, in effect, is a further compensation event which the contractor may utilise if they believe that there is a delay as a result of COVID-19.
So in relation to that, what about termination for force majeure or under NEC for prevention? Is that possible?
Yes, as Fiona, again, similar provisions under the JCT. If there is an event where or a prevention event which is forecasted to delay completion by more than 13 weeks, then the employer is entitled to terminate. I think the other point is that there is another right to terminate as well, and that's if the project manager has issued an instruction to stop work and doesn't issue an instruction to restart within 13 weeks, then either party may terminate the contract. As Fiona said, sort of, we're given sort of the easing of the restrictions that are now taking place and the fact that quite a few sites have continued during even during the lockdown. I don't think that termination is going to be perhaps as big an issue as people were originally fearing when the lockdown first took place.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think we can probably move on from NEC now and move swiftly on to FIDIC. Now, one issue that I know we've been asked about recently is that FIDIC provides for an extension of time for both delays due to necessary actions taken by the government authorities and changes in legislation.
Yeah.
Now, both of these entitle a contractor to an extension of time for COVID-19 related issues. But is there a difference between the two from a contractual perspective?
Yeah, there is some overlap, obviously. But from a contractual perspective, there is an important distinction. A change in legislation entitles the contractor to claim both time and money. However, what they say is necessary actions taken by government, that only entitles the contractor to an extension of time, so time, no money. Now, looking at your particular circumstances, if you were operating in a FIDIC, you'd have to look pretty closely at what the issue was and how the issue was derived as to whether it was a change in legislation or an action taken by government, and your entitlement to time and or money, or which head it falls into would be, you'd have to look at carefully the issues in the background relating to those particular circumstances.
Well, I agree. And obviously, I would imagine from a contractor perspective, being able to claim for an extension of time and money under changes in legislation would be more attractive. So the distinction would have to be quite carefully considered.
Yes, I definitely agree with that.
Moving on to force majeure, how are force majeure events dealt with under FIDIC?
Yeah, it's a similar to provisions under the NEC, more so than sort of the JCT. So there must be an exceptional event or circumstance which is beyond one of the parties' control, which they could not have reasonably provided for against before entering into the contract, and such party could not reasonably have avoided it, and it's not substantially attributable to the other party. So those are the circumstances where an exceptional event may give rise to an entitlement to an extension of time. The contract then clause then gives a non-exhaustive list of five events or circumstances which may constitute a force majeure event. I think the important point to bear in mind here for our listeners and anyone operating under a FIDIC contract is that it's only four of the five events listed that entitle the contractor to additional money as well as time. The fifth event listed in natural catastrophes, and given the circumstances of COVID-19, is likely to be captured by this type of circumstances. And as a result, it is just purely additional time as opposed to time and money.
I don't think there's anything further to add to that. I think you've covered off force majeure there. My final question to you on FIDIC, I know we discussed on NEC and JCT termination, and as you rightly pointed out, the government guidance is actively encouraging parties not to terminate. But just for completeness, is it possible to terminate for force majeure under a FIDIC contract?
Yeah, sure. If it's got to be for a single event lasting, this one's expressed in days, so it's got to last more than 84 days. And in those circumstances, either party may give notice to terminate. But as we were discussing with NEC, that's a fairly lengthy period of time. And the sites generally have remained open or are beginning to reopen. So I suspect rights of termination or contracts being terminated as a result, or FIDIC contract being terminated as a result of COVID-19 issues, there won't be that many, I would have thought. And this, given, as you said, rightly say, the government guidance is and CLC guidance is strongly moving or encouraging parties away from any sort of termination as a result of these events.
Well, thank you both for joining me today on this whistle-stop tour. Just to summarise on what you've both said, it seems clear that the entitlement to time and money in relation to COVID-19 is slightly different under each form of contract, and obviously that the specific factual circumstances faced by any particular party needs to be taken into account. However, I think the key message is that given the new government and CLC guidance, both of which ask that the industry work together to support the long-term health of the sector by constructively resolving all disputes arising from the pandemic, employers and contractors should, where possible, seek to take a collaborative approach and discuss whether extensions of time can be granted or any additional costs shared. And in any event, termination should be avoided where possible. In the meantime, while any risk share approach is being discussed, contractual mechanisms such as survey notices should be followed in order to preserve rights and remedies under the contract. And finally, introducing our next podcast, in which we'll be discussing drafting new contract, which deals specifically with COVID-19. This should be useful for anyone entering into a contract post COVID-19. And we really hope you'll join us again.
This is a Charles Russell Speechlease podcast.